Welcome. You're listening to Winning at Life. Welcome to the show. So happy to be here. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks.
I'm your co-host, James Parker. Coming up on the show today, well, we have a new deal sort of to replace NAFTA. I mean, there's a question mark after that. But it's been announced, and we'll break down some of how it affects you. You know, while this whole circus was going on with the hearings for the next Supreme Court justice and anyone else who can come up with a story about him, there were a couple of bills that passed last week, one of which we're going to talk about tonight. Tax Reform 2.0 actually passed the House, and we know what is in it. We know some of the stuff that we were expecting to be in it that didn't make the cut. I can't tell you whether or not this is going to pass the Senate. I mean, it's probably not in its current form, but something might pass. I mean, there's a last gasp effort for politicians of any stripe to, within a month of an election, to cut someone's taxes before they go to the ballot box. You know, that's not real politically popular to vote against that. I'm that close to election day. So some of this very well may end up becoming law, and it will affect your money. It'll affect your retirement saving options, because the universal savings plan is in there, Gregory. So we've got a lot to catch you up on. The news didn't really be in the news lately. It's just ESPN for politics is what it is.
So it's ready to move on to the Senate?
Yes. That's exactly where it's at now. And I had to dig to find this information, Gregory. It wasn't on the TV. I had to go dig it up online. So, and look,
of all places to find something, huh?
Yeah, online. Who would have guessed? And I don't know if we'll get to this today, but I really like this article out of USA Today that said that is addressing people who have adult children spending money on these adult children and risking their retirement savings. So if you're helping the kid cover rent, or if you're doing something frivolous like covering their vacation, especially, some of these people are putting themselves behind the eight ball when they should be saving that money for themselves.
You talking about that $500 billion? $500 billion that's being spent annually?
Oh, I didn't know that was the number.
Their adult children, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You're almost copying me here, aren't you?
Hey, mine's highlighted. Is yours highlighted?
No, and mine's from USA Today. Where's yours from? That looks like a Business Insider. Was it at the tippy top? There's the
CNBC.
Okay. So we just have two different versions of people looking at the same report. And yeah, it's $500 billion, Mr. Know-It-All. Do you have to know everything? Can't I just come in with some information? You go, oh, Parker, never heard that before.
Hey, I don't have anything on the House bill, so
okay,
you're good. I don't have any duplicates, no extra anything. Sorry.
Can I start with something just, it's a little.
I'm looking to see if I have it, though. I'm like, gosh, James got something and I didn't. So, it happens.
We talked about Ferrari's new million-dollar supercar. It's called the Monza SP1 and the SP2 open-air roadsters that are supposed to resemble the race cars of the 40s and 50s. They look like the old style. So, this limited edition series, they're only making a handful of them. A price tag is $1.75 million on each one. If you get it fully loaded, it goes up to $2 million. I don't know what sort of extra you could put on there that's worth a quarter of a mil, but it is. They're planning on making less than 500 of these. They said 499 of both models combined. And Gregory, it's sold out.
That is such an awesome business to be able to sell everything you build
before it's built. It's tell the story of the wineries that you've come across in Napa. What a brilliant business model that is.
Yeah, they have memberships, clubs, you get allotments, and then the club's full. There's particular wine. We have a list to get on the wait list. And we were notified a couple months ago. We moved up this year. We're now on the wait list.
You were on the wait list for the wait list. Now you're on just the wait list. All right. Hey, progress.
Moving up.
Maybe in a year or two, we can get a bottle of wine out of it.
I remember when we went to a wine tasting there, and it was like a big deal. And Stacy was loving it. Stacy's my wife. And she's like, yeah, I'd like to buy some of this today. I'm sorry. You can't buy any. Only members can. And they get theirs through their allotment. Well, how do I become a member? Sorry, we're full. Well, can I get on the list? I'm sorry, the waiting list is full. But we have a list that allows you to get on the waiting list. Well, sign me up, was her response.
Can't y'all go plant some more grapes next year? Don't y'all see what's going on? I realize that land's a little hard to come by.
You know, and then, and that, look, we talked, what's it, Ferrari 2 weeks ago was talking about their new CEO, because, you know, the previous one died, you know, was head of Fiat and Ferrari, kind of died while having a procedure. So they abruptly had to replace him. And what they were looking at from a conference with this other one is that they're supposed to build a SUV, Ferrari SUV. Could you imagine that?
And why not? Well, Porsche has that, one, and it looks all right. Yeah,
and one thing they did say about the Ferrari SUV, it's not going to be some, one of your rock climbing SUVs. It'll get you there fast to the rock climbing event, but it's not going to participate in the rock climbing. So they were looking for some confidence, and the stock did do a pullback because of that, but the expanding their lineup to get more production would mean more profit. Are they going to hold the margin, such as that? The investors weren't quite so happy with what they were hearing, but that's what they're based upon, though, is that is limited production and sell everything you build. And actually, to buy one, you have to be a Ferrari owner as well. Not only do you have a limited amount to sell, the only people that can buy is ones that have already bought. How about that for you?
I'm just so impressed by these businesses who are selling something that's not essential. Look, if you're selling a life-saving medicine,
and you don't, and it is like nobody needs what they build, and it's all outrageously expensive,
right?
But they sell it all. And it's they have huge margins, highly profitable company. They're not just getting by.
And I see these other small businessmen struggle. Have you ever been to a restaurant that's not very busy and you go in there and eat the food and it's fantastic? And you're worried. You're like, well, why doesn't the whole world know about this? This guy's actually doing better food than the busy restaurant down on the corner. But in business, so much of that doesn't matter. It's so much about your brand name and how many people already know who you are. And do you have a legacy of work behind you and stuff that you just can't buy that. You can't buy what Ferrari put together. Ferrari can only do this because they have decades of making excellent, top-notch sports cars that people have loved and then continue to love. Like it didn't fall out of style. And so I'm just amazed by businesses that can do this.
And their clientele is referred to as investors, collectors, and race enthusiasts. Okay.
Yeah, they're not buying these for utility purposes.
Not Joe, not the guy down the street. You know, I don't know what they cost new, $300,000-$400,000 depending. I'm sure the SUV will cost more. And they will have sold them all before. Look, if you that's the model. You want to be in a business. What business can I be in that I sell everything we build? And you'll find that right number. Look, there's a number of reasons that they have limited production because they do sell everything they build. This is it. This won't be built again. There'll be something else done. Another model, and it'll have major changes from this one, but also I'm sure it has to do with how many cars they've got to crash. Now, do you want to be crashing any of those? So it's limited production to probably fit into the rules of that they don't have to go wreck a bunch of cars to prove that they're safe and such.
Oh,
so
yeah,
there's
right.
Probably reasons for that limited production as well. And I don't know all those numbers, but I know that has something to do with it.
I'm sure you're right, because when it stops at 499, there's probably some regulation that kicks in at 500 where it has to either meet a CAFE standard, or like you said, they have to wreck like 2,000 of them or something with a bunch of dummies in them to get the results out. But, you know, part of that mentality, the restriction of the supply, reminds me of when you were telling me what Burberry does with all the stuff that it doesn't sell when the seasons change.
Burn it.
Yeah, they take it out back and throw it in a pile and burn it.
It's not going to a thrift store, to a discount change. And we found out actually a lot of brands are doing it. Nike, for one, destroys shoes.
That's amazing.
We will just cut them up before we give them away.
When you're trying to sell them for $300, I guess supply restriction has to be part of the plan.
Destroy your brand, let it, you know, that brand. Yeah, let it get into a discount chain.
Let the poor kid in class show up in Air Jordans, and then no one will want them anymore. Anyway, that's something with business that it never ceases to fascinate me. Just the power of a name brand, you know, it's. Like, you think you learned your lesson with Coke and New Coke and then back to Classic Coke, but it's reforming itself on a daily basis. Pretty cool stuff. It reminds me of artists like Michaelopoulos here in New Orleans. I bet you that guy was painting all day, every day, just wishing to God someone would actually put down some money for one of his paintings. Now he can't paint them fast enough. Now he has more people that want to buy them faster than he can paint them. So what does that do to the price? Just goes up and up and up and up and up. Man, oh man. All right, so something else we're going to get to today is in the numbers segment, U.S. wage growth hits a 17-month high, and we may have to break out the record books and make a eraser in one spot and make a new entry in another spot.
Well, can I just jump right back before we go to the break?
Sure.
Law of supply and demand. You're doing production, but all of a sudden demand increases, so you don't increase production. You just increase the price to balance it out. Law of supply and demand.
504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Live Financial Talk Radio. That's what Winning at Life is. This is the Daily Wrap with Gregory Ricks. And yes, I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. Here's the phone number. Get the phone. Make the call.
There you go.
504-260-0995. And we can have a discussion on air. I know sometimes people actually will call, speak to Angie on the board and say, hey, let me just give you the question because I don't want to do it on the radio. In that case, you could also text or email us, download the Winning at Life app. Go to your app store, type in Winning at Life. It will work for you. Free download, one-time login. You can connect, and a lot of resources there as well.
All right.
So what's up with the house and the bill? You're going to share it?
Yeah.
Spill the beans?
So the Universal Savings Plan is in the Tax Cut 2.0 reform plan. If you hadn't heard about this, it passed the House last week. Just the news has been bogged down with something else.
Oh, I thought there was something that happened today. Last week?
Yeah, it happened the very end of last week.
There was a lot of news stuff going on last week. I was caught up some of it. And I traveled for better than half the week, then was exhausted, then faced with other news.
A world leader could have been assassinated on Thursday, and we wouldn't know about it until about today.
Yeah, today.
Maybe today.
As it turns out.
So the extension of the individual tax cuts that was supposed to expire will be made permanent. The other thing.
So instead of us having 8 more years, you're saying this could be permanent?
Yes.
Until a House, Senate, and President change their mind sometime in the future.
Yeah, that's great context. Exactly. Okay. So because nothing's ever really permanent, so. It's permanent as
permanent
it can get.
Until they all get on the same page, which is difficult.
Right. And it's not really permanent. It's just, okay. I like that. The other thing that we had discussed it when the draft of the bill was released was the Universal Savings Plan is in this edition of the bill.
So you're speaking of the Universal 401k?
Universal Roth IRA is what it was closest. Like you use after-tax money, you put it in there. Gross tax.
Well, I thought they were supposed to be giving us some group 401k that small firms could get into?
No, that
didn't make it.
In the report I saw, they did not mention the ability for small businesses to group together and purchase a group plan as one entity. It basically form a co-op just for the purposes of offering your employees a retirement plan.
Okay.
So I didn't see that part in there. The universal savings plan, although we like the idea of it, it's basically a Roth IRA without the early withdrawal penalties that's in there, but the limit on it is $5,000 annually. So what are you going to do with that? Not a whole lot.
Run that by me again.
The limit in annual contributions on your universal savings plan, $5,000. It's peanuts.
I know, and I've complained about this a few weeks ago. I do recall complaining about it. Is that something that they're not allowing anybody to really put enough away? Like IRA, your annual IRA contribution is $5,500, basically. What's that number? Over 65? Yeah, 4,500 before. Is it?
Yeah, something like that.
Well, the point is, it's been like that forever. Why shouldn't it be like 6,500, 7,500, or 7,500 and 10 grand? You can put up to that much way if you can.
Or it'll index it to inflation, and we'll every you year know, that goes up a little bit.
Allow more to be put away. Same thing for Roth. Allow more to be put into a Roth. Now, 401ks, you know, you can put up to 18,000, then there's a $6,000 catch up. And of course, matching doesn't create a cap for you, the employer match, but you can put away a pretty good bit of money. But you know what? I think that should be bumped up. I talked to a gentleman today that's putting away between his contribution and catch up. He's around 38,000.
There you go.
For the year. So yeah, that's some serious money. We kind of went through what his retirement plan's going to look like in 6 years. So pension, Social Security, income from assets, what the RMDs are going to look like in 12 years. And kind of, you know, their numbers actually turned out to look pretty good, but they have this windfall elimination thing going on in the mix too. But once again, I diverge here. There should be more opportunity.
All right. Well, that's it for that update. You ready for the numbers?
Yes.
Welcome to the numbers segment. This is where we give you a snapshot of everything that happened in the financial world while you were at Winning It Life today. Follow along on the exact same charts and graphs. Go to winningitlife.com or the Winning It Life app and pay attention to the short sheet because we have a Tesla update coming. But first, history was made today. We have another record for the Dow, and it's the first one since, what was it, September 21st, when it kind of poked above that record, then immediately ducked back down. Well, we're back above it again. Let's see if we can stay here for longer than a couple days this time around. But that's the only one of our major indices that finished in the green. It was up about 0.5%, but the S&P was basically flat. NASDAQ was down 0.5%, and bad news for the Russell. The small cap stocks were down 1%, which is kind of a big move for a day. But congrats to Dow, record-breaking territory. Good job.
10-year Treasury still above 3%, 3.062. Liking seeing that 3 there every day. Crude oil, get this, $75.21 a barrel.
Well, there was a huge jump yesterday, a pretty big jump the day or the Friday, last Friday to end the week. And you kind of expected to either pop back down or keep going up, and it held its position. I thought that was odd.
Yeah, I'm looking at 5-day, and yeah, when you look at it, it's just like a set of steps, 3 steps going up. We had a bounce up on the 28th, the bounce up yesterday, and kind of just slightly off a little bit today. Now, don't get too excited and run out there and buying those oil-related stocks. It doesn't necessarily mean this is going to filter down to them that quickly. And then, once again, is this going to hold that price? Well, time will tell, that's for sure. Just be careful with that. Crude, Brent crude, $84 $9.82. So still got about a $9 price difference between the two. Gold has made a buck back above 1200. It's at $1,211.50. Silver, $14.81. I heard somebody talking this morning that it's fixing to really take off.
Was it a commercial?
It was a commercial. Oh, okay. And I was thinking, I said, like, how many decades are they going to be telling us that, you know, I don't know about decades, but, you know, we've covered it for over 8 years here on this show. And it's just, okay, I'm still waiting for it to take off. Because it's moved the opposite direction than what they forecasted. So there you go.
All right. Well, the most historic thing on the short sheet today would be Tesla. Now, today it was down 3%. But yesterday it was up, what was that, 15%? Because what happened yesterday? Tesla actually beat their delivery expectations for the Model 3, Model S, and Model X vehicles. And in my memory banks, Gregory, this is the first time Tesla's ever met one of their production goals. And is that too harsh on them or about right?
I thought they had still missed on the Model 3.
Did they miss on one of them?
Yeah.
All right. Well, this headline's very misleading.
But heck, have they built that many vehicles in a quarter before? I don't think so.
No, this is it. This is a record. And Gregory, yeah, this sounds like a ton of cars for Tesla, 55,840. That's just of the Model 3. 14,470 of the Model S, and let's see, 13,190 of the Model X. So they beat it all the way around. Not bad.
Yeah. One of the discussions I heard and read about this morning regarding Tesla is basically their infrastructure for dealing with all these cars that they're putting on the road. You know, the repairs and such as major bottlenecks.
Like more than the charging stations.
Yeah, because of getting parts to and who is going to fix it and all that. And remember, they don't have dealers or anything. They may have authorized servicers there, but still getting the fenders and doors to them and so forth.
Can a regular old garage like change the brake pads and the tires and do the routine maintenance on it? I'm sure they don't really need an oil change, or do they? I don't even know if they would.
Well, I'm sure the pads have to be changed at some point for braking. But a lot, I remember reading an article a few weeks back about some flaw, some problem in the braking system. And they said, we just need to do an update. Car wasn't stopping, so it needed an update. So there's a bit more to it than just taking that old Chevy and getting the brakes changed on it and checking the fluid.
But
you know, it seems to be a problem with the brake system. Here, we need to do an update. What do you mean an update? Yeah, we have to update your fluid in the reservoir. That's what an update used to be.
But the concern for in my head is if these things can't be settled at pre-existing garages, that means Tesla's going to have to build a whole new infrastructure just for what we consider mundane.
Well, upkeep. He was adamant about not wanting to have a network of dealers, and that was probably smart because he couldn't get cars to all of them. For somebody to go spend all that money and build the infrastructure to have that dealer, Tesla dealer on the corner, except it wouldn't have any cars.
All right, if you have a financial situation and you're not quite sure what to do, call Gregory, Hall of Fame Financial Advisor here, ready to take your question, 504-260-0995. Or you can send us a text or give us a call from the Winning at Life app. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. Hey there. How you doing? You're listening to Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. I am your co-host, James Parker. This is your wallet's favorite show. If you're running around right now, just burdened, thinking about some money issue, and you want to stop worrying about it, at least just tap the expertise of a Hall of Fame financial advisor. Gregory Ricks, available right now, 504-260-0995. Or you can send us a call, send us a text message from the Winning at Life app. Go download that, absolutely free in your app store. Don't cost nothing. If it's free, it's for me. All the other cute little sayings around that. Are you convinced yet? We had a nice little rash of downloads over the weekend. We get some of the great questions from the app. If you don't want your question to be on the show, just put a little note with that. I, I'm always surprised at how anonymous people like to be. It's like, you're not a public person. What do you care? But we accommodate that. If you send us a message from the app and you say, I don't want to talk about this on the radio, we won't talk about it on the radio. And we get those messages sometimes, and you never hear us say, well, this guy didn't want to be on the radio, but we're going to do it anyway.
Not like some people we've heard of when you say, look, I want to keep this private. It doesn't stay private. Like, really?
Yeah. Well, there's also some people you tell.
You told me it was going to be kept private. Well, it's not our fault.
Hey.
But it is. We will keep it private if you kind of say, look, call me about this. We'll call you.
And it's time to start giving this a mention, Gregory. Now that we're in October, our next Gregory Ricks Live is November 14th, Wine, Wisdom, and Food at Ruth's Chris Steakhouse in Metairie. So if you're looking to take the first big step in a new financial future, you think Gregory Ricks and Associates might be the right fit for your investments? That's where it starts for a lot of people. Find out if it's a good fit for you. Come to the event. There's going to be some fantastic food. It's a wine tasting paired with the Ruth's Chris menu. And if you're still going to do that Petite Syrah that I like so much, Gregory, I recommend that you go check it out. RSVP, reserve your seat. This one already has about a third of the seats full just from the waiting list at the last event. So you might want to go ahead and jump on this. I know it's about a month out, but if you do it now, it's the only way I can basically guarantee you that there will still be a seat open. So call the office, 504-832-9200. You can download the Winning at Life app that connects to all of our sponsors, including Gregory Ricks and Associates. Or you can probably remember this, GregoryRicks.com.
Did we cover the phone number? You know, get the phone, make the call.
We call the phone number if you want to call the office to reserve your seat for the event, for the show.
Yeah, for the show, it's 504-260-0995. Not throw too many numbers at you, and of course the website, either way, GregoryRicks.com.
Okay, so you want to get back to business here? U.S. wage growth hits a 17-month high. Wage growth highest it's been nearly 17 months. This is according to a study released by Glassdoor. And the good news is no one's really expecting it to slow down anytime soon. Wages grew at 2.6% year over year. And what do you think? What do you think the wages are here? National average wage, $52,664. That sounds pretty good. That's for full-time workers, but a lot of this is they're attributing a little boost in there for minimum wage hikes across 20 states that help the lower people not pull down the average so much. But that's only a fraction of it. Most of this is actual organic economic growth, a lack of available workers in the employment pool or in the unemployment pool, and companies being forced to shell out more money to keep their talent or buy new talent.
To attract the talent. You saw the effect of it on Amazon. They announced a minimum wage increase across the board for all their warehouse workers. They have a few warehouses, big ones.
Hey, and I love that stuff. Look, people think I'm anti-minimum wage. I'm only anti-minimum wage if it's the government telling you to do it. If a company wants to decide that it has a floor for wages, of course that's okay. And if they have done the math and they can make more money paying even their bottom barrel workers more, sounds like a good deal to me. Who the heck would be against that?
And it's from a business standpoint, they understand what's going on. There's more of a demand for workers, and their workers probably, if was offered more money, would bolt somewhere else. There's almost, you know, there's only so much. Oh, well, you know, I love the company. I just don't make enough, but I love the company. Well, pay me more. I love your company. So what they did was step up, kind of saying, look, we need to maintain these employees because we're going to have to attract more. So I can't pay more and underpay the ones I have. So, you know, it just made good business sense for them to do so.
Walmart has not in the recent history that I've been aware of at any of their stores ever paid minimum wage. They've always had their basement pay rate has always been above minimum wage.
And I think it was last year they had to boost that again, competitiveness.
Yeah, and you would think, can anybody stack a shelf at Walmart? Well, I mean, yeah, but they still need some sort of modicum of training, and that training is expensive and it's inefficient, and you still have to pay them while they're being trained and not being productive, and you still have to pay the person to watch over the people being trained, and they're not stocking shelves. So when you spread it out a little bit, it's easier to just pay a couple bucks more an hour than to have the turnover and have to retrain these people every 4 months or 6 months, or, you know, because keep people from leaving as soon as they get a better offer. So that's fantastic news, because as far as this economic recovery has been going, one of the things that was lagging was wage growth, but it's catching up now.
You know, in the big rush of news last week, there was one that I had caught up with, Sears again. You know, our guy, Lambert.
Yeah, Eddie Lampert.
Lampert, yeah. Chief Executive Officer, his hedge fund has a new plan for cutting Sears' debt. The main beneficiary would be Lampert's hedge fund. So Sears Holdings chief executive officer called this week for the underperforming retailer to stop the bleeding by paying off certain loans, many of them owned by his hedge fund, while swapping other debt for notes that convert to equity. This comes at a time when Sears stock is hovering just above a buck at the time of this article. Let me see if I can give you that. Yeah, September 27th of this year. To have debt that's convertible into equity when the equity is worthless doesn't appear to be very attractive proposal at all, was commented on that. So Lampert's been struggling for years to plug holes into this sinking ship. He shuttered hundreds of money-losing stores and promised to close additional 150 this year, cut more than $1 billion in annual expenses, spun off units such as Craftsman Tools, and loan the company his own money since 2012. Losses have topped $11 billion for the ones that invented retail sales through catalogs back in the late 1800s. It's the best interest of all stakeholders to accomplish this as a going concern rather than alternatives that would substantially reduce, if not eliminate, value for stakeholders. Small creditors, given the downward trajectory at Sears, Lampert has done well for himself. The retailer spun off Land's End in 2014. He's became the clothing manufacturer's biggest shareholder. Sears has sold properties to real estate investment trust called Seritage Growth Properties, and Seritage has leased the properties back to Sears. Gosh, I think that's Seritage's biggest unit holder is ESL. So ESL, oh, that's his hedge fund. How about that?
Sounds like a big fat corporate looting's been going on the last 4 years.
Yeah. Huh? ESL's proposed that Sears sell the real estate of about 200 stores in order to finance the debt redemptions. The upside for ESL is in the restructuring is money in the bank. The pill for smaller creditors is less clear. Retailers' revenue is shrinking to $4.4 billion in the second quarter of 2018 from $5.7 billion a year ago. Hoffman Estates, wow. Illinois-based Sears is working with Wachtell, Lipton, Rosen & Cotts as counsel and Lazard Limited as investment banker, according to people familiar with the matter who's not authorized to speak publicly. So I guess it's a private conversation. Here's where this is going is Sears must act immediately on this debt plan, ESL said Monday, and should prioritize a solution that avoids bankruptcy. Here's the problem that it might be. He opens himself up to monstrous investigation if Sears opens in bankruptcy. From Lampert's perspective, you know, he's an insider CEO and largest shareholder, the biggest lender, having done hundreds of millions, not billions of deals. They might be questioning if he's taking money away from the creditors.
All right, Billy and Rayson will do you next. I'm James Parker. We're Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks.
Winning It Live. The Daily Wrap. We have a few more minutes. Get that phone. Make that call. 504-260-0. 995. I'm your host, Gregory Rex, along with James Parker.
Hey there. Billy. Calling from over by Raceland. If you want to be after Billy, 504-260-0995. What can we do for you, Billy and Raceland?
All right, man. I'm over here in Bayou Blue now. But the question is, we're transferring over, me and my wife. We own our house at home in Louisiana. We're looking to buy another home, let's say around Abbeville or something like that. My wife, we're not sure if we need, before we buy something over there, to be able to sell this house here. But, you know, we all know what the oil feels like. Homa and Thibodeau, it's almost like the old style. You know, last one out of Homa turned out the lights where the oil fields crashed on us. So I was just touching base and see what y'all's idea is. Go ahead and get a VA loan or whatever on the home over there, and just then refinance it when we sell ours, or wait to buy after we sell this one.
Okay, I'm a little confused there. So the house you're living in now is paid for, right?
Yes, sir. Well,
so you're looking to borrow money to maybe do that other home purchase, then sell this one.
Yes, sir. Like I got to explain to my wife, we can do the down payment on another home, and say Abbeville, and then wait till this one here sells in the spring when the houses sell again, if they sell again.
Okay, so the one you're wanting, you have already found it?
Somewhat. She done sat in the carport twice on the front porch, so I guess it might be it.
Okay.
She's claimed it, huh?
Yeah, that's helpful. Have you talked to a lender? So you're at the end of the day, when you're buying that one, selling the one you're in, is that going to pay off the new house and it be free and clear, or are you still going to have some debt?
I'm still going to probably roll probably $30,000, $40,000 debt. And me and my wife are 58, so it's not like we're getting any younger.
Yeah, one of the people you might want to talk to is Dwayne Stein of Mortgage Gumbo on how to arrange this. But what I was going to ask, and you can go to mortgagegumbo.com to find out more about Dwayne, have you talked to a lender about how to layer this to get this done?
No, I really hadn't. We kind of just been procrastinating like most people do. I bought her dad's camper about 4 weeks ago, and I've been having her live in the camper next to her parents' house, and she's been commuting back and forth.
She can't be too happy about that for too long. Here's the problem on multiple loans is you're paying, you know, you're paying fees and closing costs and stuff when you're tying the collateral, and then you're going to do a refinance. That could cost you money. Next thing you know, you spent, you know, a few thousand here, a few thousand there. Next thing you know, it's $6,000, $8,000, $10,000. And that's what I would want you to figure out in advance is how can you layer this or get a lender that can help you and keep this cost down. And it might be, you know, when the home I have now was one closing, and I had the house built. So it was a construction loan that then turned into a permanent loan. So I just had the fees all one time, not two different sets of fees and attorneys and all that stuff. So I'd be looking at how can you simplify that or collateralize it so you can get it done. And that's what you need to speak to a lender about, like maybe Dwayne Stein, or if you have somebody you've dealt with. And that way you can speak to your banker or something, but I'd still speak to Dwayne. Get a second opinion on how this can be done and keep your fees and costs minimized.
Because I know he's over there in New Orleans, and I'm moving all the way to Abbeville, Kaplan area.
But yeah, I know, but it's a phone call. It's a phone call. You don't have to go to his office. You know, it's just exploring. And, your preferences if he can help you, if not, but probably give you some ideas. And what you and whoever you're doing business with, that's what you want to try to figure out. How can we put together that keep the cost down? I don't want closing costs on two loans and then a refi and so forth. And that's my concern there on that. And you might want to do it sooner than later so you can lock in a rate. You know, we've got another rate hike coming into the year. These interest rates are inching up.
Yeah, they lag behind these rate hikes, which means they owe us a little bit as it stands, and they're going to owe us a little more after December.
Yeah, you could see a quarter point move in the next few months.
Does that help, Billy?
Yeah, yeah, that's why, you know, I listen to y'all Saturday morning when I can. And, you know, I knew that y'all had the realtor guy there, and you have, heck, you even got that old football player that works around with y'all. So, yeah, that helps a lot, guys.
Okay, awesome. Thanks for listening to the weekly wrap as well as the daily wrap.
Good stuff, Billy. Thanks for calling. 504-260-0995.
Yeah, Billy was referring to the weekly wrap that we do on Saturday mornings from 10 to 1 live Financial Talk Radio.
It's a pretty good little show. I like that one. All right, so we do have some time here. So we both saw the same study, and we didn't talk about this before the show, but you showed up with it too. And that is a massive amount that people are paying for their grown kids' expenses. And we're talking about recurring expenses like rent and vacation. How do you help your adult kids without blowing up your retirement?
Yeah, and they're over $500 billion a year on their adult children, but they're only putting away about $250 billion towards their own. It's twice the money. I've had many conversations where it turns out that some of the money is they're having to help children with problems and such, and it just they don't seem to make enough. There's one a few weeks ago that's affecting his monthly retirement income because he's wanting to pull some money out to pay for one of the children's school tuition. This is not college. This is grade school. That and it's going to affect his monthly income. We've made sure he's aware and understood that and signed off that he is aware of that. There was one a few years ago, client, we were actually, they were ready to get started. We were ready to go forward. They had came in, we were reviewing a few things, and then they kind of disclosed to me about what they were spending to help their kids and some of the outlay that's coming. And the math did not work for their portfolio. And it is going to be a spend down, and there's no way to fix it, except they had to stop doing that. And I made a decision in that meeting as a firm, we weren't going to go forward with them. Yeah, you know, I didn't want to make the firm didn't need to make any comp or anything going that way, and they weren't going to follow our guidance. And it's not the first time that's happened. And we've counseled many a times to be careful with fulfilling those requests because it could be at the detriment of your funds. We've seen people spend down their accounts.
See, this
because
is
because of this.
This is an area I'm not very good at. I have some friends of the family who they're a little bit older than me, but when their parents died, they got the grandma's house and they let their adult son who just got married live in it. And yeah, I'll pay rent, but the checks stopped coming. What are you going to do? Evict your own son and his wife and their two little kids? So they just eat it. And I don't know what advice to give them, Gregory. I'm not, like I said, I'm not good at this. Where would you even start with that situation?
That's a really tough situation. And I've had discussions about those scenarios as well. Look, every one of them is different. You give them guidance. And look, this has been with a wife isn't even working, and they're sending kids to private school, and they quit paying us the rent. We've suggested maybe she should go to work. You know, it's a tough situation there. And you just have to have a discussion, but what you need to do is if you're going to to do this help or scenario like that. You need everything kind of clarified in the future. You're giving out money. I sure hope you're not expecting it back, because it's one of the ways you should look at it. If you're expecting it to be paid back, you might have a problem with the relationship going forward. If you, you know, this rental house, if you take this over, I'm going to give you a sweetheart deal, but I live off the revenue. So if I'm helping you, you make sure you help me by continuing to pay it, or we're going to have to change the deal and do a lease and everything so you can evict them if it comes to that.
They need your help. How do they reach you?
I'm a money manager, financial advisor, you know, seeker of the path, seeker of the risk number. Oh, on the path, where are you? That's a discussion we have had with a couple today. What does their next 15 years look like? They're going to start the retirement phase in 3 years, and Social Security turns on a few years later. The number is 504-832-9200, gregoryricks.com. Get the phone, make the call.
You're home away from the show, winningatlife.com and the Winning at Life app. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.